Chapter 16, The Orphan Girl. During the entire time I had been with my friends at the Merrim River, I was never aware of the little Dolores, and I supposed that if their departure had not been of such an extreme urgency, I probably would have never seen or heard of the little girl. Why they kept her out of my sight, I shall never know. But in the early hours of the morning of the 27th of February 1967, it was Ceety herself who introduced me to Dolores. This is the story of Dolores. The Tiberians called Lola because little Dolores herself wanted to be called by a shorter abbreviation, Lola. To find some clues to the mysterious appearance of the six-year Indian girl, I simply did not have the time. What I was told was this. Ceety had taken the little girl from Satura some time ago and wanted to return with her to Itibira too, hoping that the six-year-old girl will be able to adjust herself and not die like the mother of Sister Maria Navidad. Why, at the last moment, Ceety decided to let me take the girl back to the Peruvian capital was, she explained, because of a direct order from their home planet. For many thousands of years, spacecrafts of theirs and others have had trouble with some magnetic forces of a very small but extremely dangerous planet called Tapra or Takra. This Tagra, as I prefer to call it, seems to be disturbing their plans as far as the cancer planet is concerned. As no human beings live on Tagra, Mr. Yua, the second in command, together with 7 cosmonauts and several women scientists, including Ceety, received the order to investigate and possibly destroy this planet. As Lola, the little girl had taken a fancy to Ceety, but as Ceety felt it too dangerous to take her along, I was asked to become a father. Just like this, a father for an orphan girl. When I first saw the girl, I fell in love with her immediately. Not at all. All shy, she seemed to be at home in part of the spacecraft, a separate section I had never known. The little girl had taken a great liking not only to Ceety, like us to a mother, but also to Satura. He had found her about 6 months before near the road from Urkos to Cusco, while investigating the religious symbols of some pre-Inca ruins. Very close to the desolate ruins, a small path ran down from the hills, and Satura had seen the child running towards him, calling for help. The little girl, with bleeding feet, was begging him to follow her to see her mother. As Ceety told me, the children had spoken in Spanish. Cercita, Cerciti, Mamita, Se Muere. Very, very close. Mammy is dying. But Cercita in the Peruvian highlands meets 2 hours' walk, and when Satura finally came to the miserably hut, the mother of the girl was dead. As a biologist, Satura could see that Lola's mother had died of undernourishment, of hunger, and that the whimpering little girl was on the verge of death herself. Besides a few olotes, the half-empty stem or of corn cups, there was absolutely nothing to eat, and Satura immediately gave the girl 1/3 of the life tabling of a life saving tablet. He let her sip from his own juice container until the control craft was able to arrive at a clearing nearby. Within 2 days, CT said, the girl had taken a liking to the ETB Rains. To my friends from a more refined and civilized world, the task of taking care of a minor much have meant no problem, particularly because of the fantastic health centers. But to find myself one very early morning near the Peruvian town of La Union with Dolores in my arms, shivering in cold until some kind of truck driver took us toward the town of Oroyo, that is quite a different story. Not that I minded taking care of the little girl, but the suddenness of the whole thing. The tears in Citi's eyes and her last sweet words, the strange breathing of her while saying goodbye, and her sudden decision to return the ring she had taken from me at the Lima Hospital, made me wonder, what is next? Also, as I had spent most of my Peruvian money in Colombia, buying the useless camera Satura had given back to me, I had only enough money to buy a Colectivo fare to Lima, besides a few overripe bananas. During the bumping ride down the mountain road towards Matucana and the great Peruvian capital, we ate our bananas and listened to the car radio. There were 5 more passengers in the car, and Lola had to sit on my knees. To become a father, I thought, is very easy, but to be a father, and especially a father to a 6-year little girl without papers or relatives, that, I thought, is going to be a problem. It takes about 4 hours from Oroyo to Matucana, and during the entire time I was thinking about what I should do with the little Lola. Finally, I found the right solution. In Lima, I had known a wonderful French lady. Having been married to a Peruvian officer, she was now a widow living in a beautiful house in the capital garden district of Miraflores. When we reached Lima at about 4 p.m., I went immediately to change and get some money, then off to the modern department store. I bought some clothes for Lola, had an early supper, and at 7 p.m., I was ringing the bell at the garden entrance of my old friend. Little Dolores, in spite of having lived in a spacecraft, must never have seen such a splendor as this magnificent house near the blue Pacific. She was frightened, but before nightfall at 8 p.m., little Lola had made friends, not only with the little old lady, but with her 2 little dogs, Pommy and Bella. As I felt much too tired to explain things to our hostess, besides what I could possibly have told her, I just asked her to do the great favor and watch the little girl for a couple of days, as her parents had to go some work for me out of town. This last sentence then as a little lie, of course. Go on. Thanks to the general laissez vivre, which prevails over all South America, she did not ask questions. Also I had offered to pay for little Lola's keep. When I finally wanted to leave, I found that Lola did not want me to go. She started crying, and I stayed with her, looking at the television until she got sleepy and we got to bed. A couple of days later, after I had finished the installation of a grinding plant in Callao, the port of Lima, I was told by her old lady that under no circumstances would she let me take the girl from her, nor did she want any money from me for Dolores. There is an amusing sequel to this story. When I returned from Europe in the following year, I looked up my good friend. I hardly recognized the elegant 7-year-old lady who came into the drawing room, particularly as she raffled off a greeting in perfect French. But it was my little Lola right enough. She called my friend Mama Francaise. The bond between the lonely women and the young girl, the two white dogs included, was deep and affectionate. But in a way I was disappointed. The beautiful little Indian girl, having been legally adopted, now looked and talked as if she had come from Paris. I still wonder what the Itibi Rains will think of that. Footnote to this. I often thought that it could have been because of scientific and anthropological interest that Itibi Rains had the little girl on board, but I must confess that after thinking it out, I came to the conclusion that these people are unable to act with deliberate intention. I believe they wouldn't even have the cruelty to put a monkey into a rocket and blow it up to the moon and see what happens to the poor creature. Much less would they want to make an experiment with a little girl. The girl was on the spacecraft simply because she was found widowed parents, crying, undernourished, and starving with hunger. That was end of chapter 16. And the next is then chapter 17, which says the oldest religion on earth. During the years 1967 and 1968, I wound up my affairs in Lima. There were two other installations to be finished, and then I was free to return to the USA and Europe. One of the interesting things I discovered when I having a farewell drink with my friends from the university was that they knew of a certain guerrilla activity in the area where I had fought the Miriam River Flavory Plantation to be located. Checking the best maps of Amazon, I came to the conclusion that my first idea of the Itibirayan settlement was absolutely inconceivable with the correct typography of this part of South America. Some of my friends, who did believe my story, suggested that the Miriam River camp must have been much further south, perhaps towards the river Paucartambo. I told them that the Indian criminal who had ventured into the plantation headquarter definitely had talked about the Miriam and Leticia section. Also, Turu had mentioned Iquitos. On the other hand, my friends pointed out that some years ago, many strange new plants had been discovered by a French explorer near the town of Pucallpa, One of these they called a special flavor pollen, producing flower about the thickness of a double size asparagus, white, thick, and with the most delicious perfume. A color photo of this discovery was printed in one of the leading South American magazines. I'm convinced that it is one of the pollen producing plants from Itibiratu. My friends must have left behind after they abandoned their first plantation. When I left the Peruvian capital, my friends from the university voluntarily issued a very nice reference in regard to the research work and the technical installation I had done for them in the year 1966 and rechecked during my stay in Lima in 1967. I had taken a personal interest in the Peruvian food problem. The ring which Citi had returned to me before leaving, I had already shown to several experts living in Holland. In order to get a better vision of the engraved symbol, I had the ring's photo enlarged. From the illustration, you may see yourself that the metal insert, the heart of the ancient god, some of my friends believe to be the image of the first human god ever pictured, and which I came to accept as the oldest religious symbol in the entire universe, used by Itibiraian scientists as a magnetic sender and receiver in connection with their highly developed control centers, or perhaps their so-called A generator or brain computers. This must have had a religious significance already thousands, perhaps millions of years ago. The pre-Inca, pre-Aztec and pre-Mayan civilizations all shown a similar symbol. But also the earliest Egyptian pharaohs had similar symbols engraved on their tombs. Many of some symbols have been found in the temples of India. All this is proof that the first and most ancient religion of mankind must have been close to one and the same belief in God nature. The very same belief that Mr. Satura had mentioned during our last discussion on board the spacecraft during the night of February the 26th. Later, of course, the Mayas and especially the Aztecs and the Incas must have changed this belief into a multi-god belief, the god of sun, the god of rain, the god of wind, etc., etc. Today, if you study the Mexican and Peruvian temples, we find many similar symbols, and it become obvious that at one time the North American and South American continent must have been the seat of human civilization. Between this former world and its ancient secrets, a veil of many thousands of years has descended, and the chances are that we shall never get through in many mysteries. Behind this veil, aided by the disappearance of the Atlantic continent, which was the link between Africa and Europe, aided by our own superstitions, belief and dogmatic form of thinking, the truth about this, our first religion, about people who knew about an intercosmic society with similar religious symbols, may never come to light. Even today, these symbols secretly form part of the South American Indians' religious feeling. Without knowing it, and deep in their hearts, all over Mexico, Central and South America, many Indians cherish the belief that one day the Inca, pre-Maya and pre-Aztec god shall claim his former rights and rule the American continent. In the power of their gold and silver, first the conquerors, the lot of the Indians fell from bad to worse. Perhaps secretly they still long for these their former gods to come to life again. Even under their rags of contempt and humility, the former pride in one and the same God, the God of nature, has been kept alive. It is significant that our friends all out of space, who regard all people, regardless of color and creed, as part of one and the same intercosmic human family, should know the same symbol of God nature. Isn't it amazing that the most primitive man on our planet should have known the same religious symbol of God as the most advanced civilization of another world? Isn't it proof that God is the same to all mankind in the universe? Isn't it proof that cosmophilosophy is part of all mankind in cosmos? The incredible fact that many times we have been visited by out-of-space people is also shown on many South Indian religious paintings. I have taken a photograph of such a painting. It shows the covered face of God nature with two spacecrafts pictured on the God sacred cloth. At a closer look, we are able to see the negative and positive upper and lower section of the flying craft, the intercosmic cellular receivers and senders, the reactionary central generator and command units within the reactionary central generator. This primitive design of a flying saucer corresponds almost with my own observation, parenthesis, with the exception that the center units were not square, as shown on the religious painting, end of parenthesis. I have shown this painting to an Indian professor on visit to London. This man had been to Tibet in the year 1947 and 1948. He told me, even in Lhasa, on the roof of the world, he had observed religious symbols with flying machines pictured. That was end of chapter 17, and next is chapter 18, which is named Paradise, but that I will begin on another audio file then.